We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft. But Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink. Which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Bite, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's Byte.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
It's Monday, September 13th. I'm Jeff Schwartz alongside Gabe Goodwin. This is Jeff Schwartz of Smarter Than You. We're back with another Monday episode breaking down all of college football, starting with my Oregon Ducks. We'll give you a top six as well. We'll talk about two teams that are definitely not back. Gabe, your team is one of them. We'll get to that in a second. Some breaking news before we get to Gabe and the rest of the show. USC has fired head coach Clay Helton after a horrific home loss to Stanford, and an era that has been underwhelming has ended as USC has fired Clay in the middle of the year when they should have done it in the offseason. And look, before we get into the downfalls of Helton, I think it's worth pointing out that Helton held this job with class, with grace, and they needed a coach like that after the issues the program had been in and the school had been in. I've met Clay. He is an awesome guy. He means well. He works hard. It just didn't produce wins at USC at the level they want to produce wins. And later in the show, we'll talk about USC. We'll talk about why they have the issues, what they have to fix. And the immediate question is, who becomes their head coach? I have long argued this USC job is not as good as people want it to be. And this will be the test, because if they want to spend the money, let's assume they do, they have many options to go, right? Urban Meyer, is he leaving Jacksonville today or tomorrow, right? But Urban had a chance. I don't think he's going there, right? Bob Stoops, supposedly they were in on him last year, didn't want to pay him. Part of paying a coach is not just paying him, by the way, it's paying for the assistants, which the Pac-12 is strongly lacking. So you have to pay for the assistants as well. Chris Peterson, the former Washington coach, now doing Washington and Boise coach, now doing analyst work for Fox, he'd be a great hire. He'd be a home run hire. You know what you're getting with him each and every season. He recruits at a high level. He plays sound football and he wins football games. He'd be the safe hire. Does he have the LA glitz and glam? No. But at this point, you need to hire someone who's a good freaking coach. And Chris Peterson's a good coach. Luke Fickell, Matt Campbell, James Franklin, all names will be thrown out there. But my question is this, is this job as Is it looked at in such favor that we think it should be looked at? The USC fans think it should be looked at? We'll find out with this hire. We'll find out if they want to spend, who they're going to spend it on, and what they're going to do. They have to rebuild the program. The program doesn't have the talent It does have the talent, but doesn't have the physicality needed to be a great program. So someone's going to have to come in there and rebuild the physical culture of USC. The last name thrown out there will be Oregon head coach Mark Cristobal. We'll talk plenty about Oregon today, their big win after Ohio State, but he already has a playoff caliber team now and a team next year in 2022 that should be better. So he's not leaving Oregon for USC. He has the financial support there, the support from up top. He's got Phil Knight and Nike. He's not going anywhere. The Pac-12 needs USC to be good. And so I'm hopeful the hire will help the Pac-12 do this. Obviously, that could be to the detriment of Oregon. Fine. But a good USC is good for the conference, good for the West Coast, and I hope they nail this hire. We'll find out what they do. They've gone, you know, USC guy, the last four hires, three hires. Don't want to do that, right? Find the best coach. You don't have to hire a USC guy. We only hire Michigan guy or Michigan man, Jim Harbaugh. Hire the best coach the money can buy. Put the money into it. Put the money into the assistants, in the support staff, and go out and find yourself a top-notch coach. We'll see how it goes. I'm shocked they actually did this. And we'll see what happens the rest of the season. Obviously, you have a whole year to figure this out, who they're going to hire, and we'll see what they do. So let's see what happens. All right, to the show. How was your weekend?
Shut up, Jeff. You know, you're so happy. You come in here wearing your Oregon Duck swag and you're calling out my team, USC. We had very different weekends and you know it. You don't need to taunt me for it. Congratulations. You know, you almost broke Twitter trying to celebrate this thing, but Oregon is all the way back.
Dude, I had a good weekend. The Ducks won, the Chiefs won, my gambling picks won. My Giants have won seven in a row in baseball. Leads to lead the NL West. It might be the best sports weekend of my life. But let's get back to the Ducks. I've been waiting my entire life for them to win this game. Like, I don't know what else to say. Like, I was, you know, Dan Rubenstein. I FaceTimed Dan Rubenstein after the game, and we were both, like, emotionally couldn't even talk to each other. We were so excited because this is a game the Pac-12, first of all, has lost for 25 years in a row now, right? We've lost this game. I think the last time it was, like, USC in 03 went to Virginia Tech and, like, smashed them at RFK Stadium, right? Like, it was, like, it had been so long since the Pac-12 had won a game like this. And Oregon, look, for as good as we've been, we have won Rose Bowls, yes. We have been to a championship game twice, by the way, right? Lost to Auburn by three and got blown up by Ohio State. But we have never been this talented before, right? Our team's now, it'll be four straight years of top 10 classes. And we've been waiting to see this talent and this kind of sort of style of football, which was not under Chip Kelly what we had, where we're kind of winning with just big physical bodies and defense, right? Defense, which we hadn't had in a long time. And we're waiting for it to come to fruition, right? And it has, right? 9-4 Mario's first year, then 12-2 with a Rose Bowl win. Last year was COVID, but we hadn't had a game like this where we're on the road against Ohio State. And look, Ohio State's not the same team they've been, I think. I think we can agree on that. But nonetheless, still going on to the shoe, down our best player on the team, our defensive lineman, Kayvon Thibodeau, who would be a top five draft pick. Then we're down Justin Flo, a five-star linebacker who had 14 tackles in the first week. We're down actually the guy in front of him, and the guy behind him got hurt in this game as well. Two defensive starters were coming back off suspension that did not play very much in this game. Like, it's a game that we should have lost, and instead we dominate. And we dominated, Gabe, in the trenches, right? In the line of scrimmage, which is things that the Pac-12 hasn't done since Pete Carroll's USC teams, right? We have not won a game in the trenches in so many years. And we won this game with our offensive line, who was fabulous. And look, our defensive line got home at the end, right? For a long stretch of time, it was hard to get home. But we actually limited their rushing attack too, right? We were good up. We were just, yes, we gave up 500 yards passing, which is kind of the plan. I said this before. I said it last week. The goal of the Oregon game plan was just don't get beat on chunk plays, which we didn't do, right? We didn't give up except when Mikael Wright was looking at his wristband for the play. We kind of just had a slow bleed, and it worked. It worked. And everything that I said was going to happen worked, right? Joe Moorhead, the offensive coordinator. He came with a brand new game plan, which I said was going to happen, right? Like, everything that I asked for it to happen actually happened like I planned it to. And the one thing, too, that is incredible is our quarterback, look, Anthony Brown is just okay. Like, you don't win those games with just okay quarterbacks, right? When everything is schemed up, when it's one read or it's look at this side of the field, he's good, okay? But when it's third and eight, he's not good. And that's something to worry about later. But it worked. Everything worked Saturday, and it just felt so good to finally have like a day where I can just. I was so tired too Saturday night, man. I went and had in the tub, had a cigar by 8 o'clock. My wife was out of town. I put the kids to sleep, And like, I just passed the F out about 10 o'clock. Like I had the remote in my hand, TV on, because I woke up at about 2:15 and checked the USC score. We'll get to that in a second. But like, I've just, and like, it's we've been waiting for this for so long. We play Stony Brook this week. I'm going to even watch. I don't give any shits about this game this week. I'm just going to like, it's on Pac-12 Network. I don't even know what time the game is. I do not care. I don't care. We can win by 1 point. Doesn't matter. We've won this game. And here's the most important thing about this is it gives us an inside track to make the playoff, right? Which is very important. And the reason it does that is now we have a tiebreaker over Ohio State. Very important, right? Just like Georgia has a tiebreaker over Clemson. Also very important. And two is that no Pac-12 team has run the Pac-12 conference since it expanded 12. The last team to do was Oregon in 2010. And Oregon has all their tough games on the road. I know Washington might not be any good. Stanford, we'll find out. They go to Utah. Like they have all their games, theoretically, their toughest games on the road this year at UCLA, October 23rd. So like I know I wasn't even supposed to start with Oregon today, with my top six, but I just couldn't help myself. And I'm so happy that Oregon won this game.
Now it's coming across. You're right. We have a format. We're going to get to your top six, and then we're going to revisit this game and also look at the Ohio State side of this game.
Yes.
That's an important thing for a lot of our audience. They're thinking, oh man, wait a second. What does this mean for the Big Ten? What does this mean for a team that many people assumed was marching towards another chance at a playoff at least? We'll come back to that. I just need to help with one visual.
Yes.
You're in your hot tub with a cigar holding a remote. And you fall asleep?
No, I fell asleep in the bed. I got out and fell asleep in the bed.
I was nervous for a second. You're in the hot tub, you fall asleep.
I might be dead if I did that. No, I got out. Like I was trying to watch a Washington game, fell asleep trying to watch Utah BYU. I didn't even plan to watch USC Stanford. And like, I put it on. I think it was maybe over by then, or maybe not by the time I woke
up. You're like a lot of the players on USC and fell asleep in the middle of that game.
Yeah, So it seems like we're on the same page there. But yeah, It was a fun weekend, and let's get to my rankings.
All right, so normally, just to be fun and different here, you give us your top six.
Yes.
As of the moment, based on what we've seen.
Yes.
Preseason rankings be damned. What's going to end up happening later in the year? Screw that. Give us your top six right now, Jeff. I'm ready for laughter.
All right, well, Alabama and Georgia are obviously 1 and 2, right? Alabama, they played Northwest Tech State this week and won by 1,000. Georgia did the same thing, and they crushed Stenson Bennett played. Stenson Bennett, feels like a perfect name for a quarterback who's playing at Georgia. He was 10 of 12 for 288 yards as they beat UAB 56-7. All right, so, and Alabama beat Mercer 48-14. Like, I mean, whatever, like those two teams are the top right now. Number three, I've seen some polls come out, and I just don't agree with what they're doing. But to me, it's Iowa at number three.
Whoa.
Yes, Iowa's offense is exactly what Kirk Ferentz wants it to be. They're going to run the football. They're going to play action pass when needed, and they're not going to take chances. Right? They got outgained 175-339 against Iowa State. But this game was on the road. First time in history of this game that both teams were ranked, and they happened to both be ranked in the top 10. But their defense, again, was terrific. Forced four turnovers. Brock Purdy, Iowa State's quarterback, got benched in this game. Like, and he's supposed to be, and Iowa State was supposed to be like the cream of the crop in the Big 12 this year, right? They're supposed to make the run this year. Again, never won 10 games in their program history, but yet they're supposed to make a run this year. And so, Iowa has now won two games on the road. One game on the road, but two games against ranked teams. To me, that's pretty important. And again, the rankings are kind of wonky, and we'll get to that in just a second. I'm going to have one gripe at the end of my rankings. I put Oregon at four. Look, went on the road against Ohio State. I don't know how they're not in the top four. I think there are four in the eight in the AP poll. Look, I think I had UCLA up there last week as well. I'm not moving the Bruins off of this right now. They didn't do anything to deserve to move off. So I'm going UCLA 5. Why not? We're going to keep it as we had. And then I think Clemson's going to go back to 6. They got back on track this week. I think they're a really good football team. They just kind of ran up in a buzzsaw against Georgia. But I'm going to put Clemson at 6. Penn State's close to being up there. They're 2-0. They smashed Ball State. A lot of people sharp people were picking Ball State to cover this game because of their offense. But Penn State played much better. The one gripe I have with the rankings, what's that face for?
You're missing an obvious team here. Maybe this is your gripe. Nice case for Iowa. You know, thanks for mentioning some of these other teams. Have you forgotten Oklahoma has a football team?
Thank you. I'm glad you mentioned Oklahoma because they are my gripe. So I'm purposely leaving them out of this, not because I don't think they're a top six team. It's because the voters in the AP poll that has been out so far, I'm not sure the coaches poll. Yes, coaches poll is out as well. They're both three in the coaches poll and in the AP poll. I'm just curious what they've done that Iowa hasn't done. What do they deserve? They beat Tulane by five and scored 3 points second half of that game. And they beat a team called Western Carolina this past weekend. I'm just curious, what is Iowa, Oregon, UCLA, I guess, to an extent, what has to be done for those teams to get respect? The team who looked bad against Tulane and then smashed a nobody. What has to happen in college football? Because the problem is, Gabe, is that right now is that Oklahoma, Clemson, it doesn't matter if they lose, right? They're still going to be right back up at the top, and we're not rewarding teams that have played tough schedules so far over teams that haven't. And I get it. By week six, Gabe, this is all going to work itself out. And that's why I make my rankings the way I do is because, yeah, right now it's fun to talk about this. Right? But by week six, Gabe, we're all going to be back to where we should be because we're going to have enough games, enough sample size, teams will weed themselves out. But right now, we do not give credit to teams that win big football games. Iowa has won two big football games so far. You might not like Indiana, fine, but everyone loved Iowa State this year, and they smashed Iowa State. They should get. Oklahoma hasn't done that this year. And Oklahoma played Iowa. Oklahoma would probably be a touchdown favorite or more on a neutral site. Okay, fine, but let's give Iowa some credit. Let's give Oregon some credit. Oregon went on the road, beat Ohio State, number three team in the country. They should be ahead of Oklahoma.
Yeah, I mean, I'm with you. I think that it actually, for the teams I'm about to bring up, you're saying it works out in the end, but not always. Not always. And unless you get the right thing on your schedule, you know, that one loss team that everyone was in love with preseason still gets to leapfrog you if you don't have the right schedule. So let me bring them up. Cincinnati, off to a very good start, Heisman contender at quarterback. They get Notre Dame in a couple weeks, few weeks here. And okay, so if they come out of the other end of that undefeated with a big win over a top 10 Notre Dame, don't we have to talk about Cincinnati in the top four or five?
We probably do. And look, at Indiana this week, that I don't think it'll be an easy game. Indiana's not ranked, obviously, but they came back and smashed Idaho this week. I think they should be better against the Bearcats. But yeah, look, in Notre Dame, you know, they had a tough one against Toledo that I don't think anyone could watch because it was on Peacock. But I hope they're not a sponsor of this fine podcast. But yeah, there was a game no one watched. Yes, they need to be talked about. And this is where we get into the interesting part about these. And Cincinnati will now be in the Big 12, which will be good because we'll be able to judge them more fairly. The issue that we have with Group of Five teams, in my opinion, is we give at times too much weight to one game, right? So UCF beats Auburn. Oh my God, UCF. It's the reason what makes a Power 5 team, it makes it so impressive to go undefeated, is they play a Power 5 schedule of conference opponents, right? So if you are Cincinnati, and right now your schedule is Temple, UCF, Navy, Tulane, Tulsa, UCF, SMU, and ECU. That's your schedule. When you're in the Big 12, you're going to have Iowa State, Kansas State, Texas for a couple of years, Oklahoma for a few years, Oklahoma State, right? Kansas, who sucks, but you know, they're still a Power 5 team. Like, you're going to have a much tougher schedule of opponents that running the table is not very likely, right? So while, yes, if they beat Notre Dame, I'll put them up there. But as soon as Clemson starts beating more teams, Oklahoma, UCLA, or they're just going to pass Cincinnati again because their schedule is not very tough.
Well, does that mean that you're going to be forgiving of Texas A&M, who barely got past Colorado?
Well, that's why they're not in here, because right. I mean, their quarterback got hurt early in the game, which I get, but Colorado is not a team that A&M should play close games against, and credit Colorado. I mean, Durrell's done far better than I thought he would, but that's a case where that's why they're not in the top six right now, is that they just haven't shown they haven't shown very much. They kind of sluggish against, was it Murray State 2 weeks ago? And now, Kent State. And now they sluggish in Colorado. They get New Mexico this weekend, and they play Arkansas. So we'll find out. Then Mississippi State. Then they play Bama. So again, week six, we'll know more about all these teams.
Okay. All right. I'm going to mark week six. Interesting top six. to start. Your larger point is a good one for me to hear, so maybe for the audience to hear. Like, do something with your first couple weeks of a schedule and earn the credit now. So Iowa, UCLA, Oregon, they're all shining bright.
Penn State is what, like, get your credit now, guys.
Okay. All right. So let me throw a few. The way we like to do this show is I throw a few things I think I learned as just a fan, a guy, and then you sort of tell me if I got it right or maybe inform me a little bit more about a few games. So let's take a quick break here. We'll come back. We'll do things I think I learned, and we'll cover the whole rest of the sport that way.
Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
All right, Jeff, we're back. It's time to go over a few things I think I learned this weekend. Now, obviously, you opened the show and couldn't contain yourself. You went all in on Oregon. I want to come back to that game against Ohio State. So what I think I learned, Oregon blew up the whole college football playoff even more than Georgia did last week. Okay, this basically guarantees, and you touched on this, this guarantees the Pac-12 champ is making the playoff. Because now, if you have to go through Oregon, you're basically proving you did everything you have to do to make the playoff, right?
Yes. And UCLA does have Oregon October 23rd. And again, USC wouldn't play them, or the winner of the South wouldn't play them until the Pac-12 championship game. Actually, they do play Arizona State, though. So it'd be USC, essentially. So, and Oregon's the only chance. I don't think UCLA... I mean, maybe I'll be wrong. I mean, that game would be in the Rose Bowl. It'd be fun to watch. But I'm not sure that... UCLA is that good of a talent. The one thing about both these teams, it's pretty interesting. So Pro Football Focus is not, you know, it's a good resource, put it like that, right? It's not the be all end all, but it's a good resource. Oregon's quarterback and UCLA's quarterback, Anthony Brown and Dorian Thompson Robinson, are ranked 9th and 10th in the conference in grades for quarterbacks. Like, their quarterback situations aren't ideal. And even though Oregon won this game, like I said, when things aren't as planned, that, you know, that they're just not as good. And we're going to talk about that on the NFL show on Tuesday, by the way. There's a great example of that. I can't wait to get to that. But nonetheless, that's the concern with Dorian Thompson-Robinson and Anthony Brown. And so I don't expect anyone to run the table in the Pac-12. I know it sounds weird that Oregon just beat Ohio State, but it's kind of not how the Pac-12 conference works. If they had Justin Herbert, I'd be like, yes, we should go all the way, right? If UCLA had... Cade McNown, like, I feel like, you know, like this show, like, it's been a long time since they had like a real, Josh Rosen doesn't count, obviously.
Oh, your boy, Love, you know, Aaron Rodgers' best friend. He was there.
Yeah, he went to Utah State.
Who am I thinking of? Who am I thinking of?
Brett Hundley.
Hundley, thank you. God, because yeah. Hundley was Rodgers' backup. That's
but
a goose.
That doesn't count. Cade McNown was like their best, like their actual, whatever. Right. Nonetheless, we'll talk enough about the Bruins. So yes, it sets up the Pac-12 conference for a loss somewhere. The UCLA can lose and Oregon can lose. But Oregon has a tiebreaker against Ohio State, which is the most important thing here, right? A 4-team playoff, if they're both 12-1,
right?
I don't care how they get there, Oregon should be ahead of Ohio State.
Yeah, and or conversely, let's say they make it all the way to the Pac-12 championship game, either undefeated or with one loss somehow, and now, you know, USC comes back from the dead, or Arizona State, some team, UCLA, beats Oregon, who we know beat the best team in the Big Ten. Like, how are you keeping them out? How are you keeping a one-loss Pac-12 champ out if they go through Oregon? That's all I'm saying.
You're not, and what's... And it's funny talking about the Pac-12 like this, because the rest of the conference is a bunch of steam and poop right now. And so, like, to see that, and this is the ACC model, right?
Yeah.
The ACC is a dumpster fire, but Clemson's really good. Look, for all honesty, the Big 12 at times a dumpster fire, but Oklahoma's been really good. You know, and the Big 10's been traditionally more solid, so is the SEC. But we're looking at the Pac-12, where Washington can't buy themselves a touchdown. USC, Stanford, ASU, Utah, right? The Bruins beat UCLA, beat LSU, and Oregon beat Ohio State. So they're in that same boat, right? Where those are the two teams most likely to give a playoff shot, but both have those signature wins that can help them get there in tiebreaker situations.
All right, so then let's spend a little time on the, you know, the schedules and the signature wins on the Big Ten side. So this is a real killer for Ohio State. They're not dead, but their conference has looked good through 2 weeks, at least to this fan's eyes. So Penn State won again. You mentioned them earlier. Michigan looked good against Washington. You touched on them briefly. We already talked to Iowa. So the Big Ten feels like a complicated one now that it isn't just automatically Ohio State. So who do we like now?
Well, I think Ohio State is probably still the team, but probably about what they've done kind of right and wrong, right? So, you know, offensively, they're great. Like, there's no doubt about it. I mean, Olave and Wilson and C.J. Stroud, just he misses still a couple throws, right? He's a young player. We saw he missed a couple throws early, then he overthrew at the end for Verone McKinley. Their offensive line still, they're going to score a ton of points. But what worried me about their defense this past weekend, and it played to our advantage, was we just out-schemed them, like plain and simple, right? That played man coverage, and we ran away from man coverage, right? So what you can do, and this is what Oregon did, is getting to the edge on man coverage is really good, right? Because if a defender is over a wide receiver or a tight end to that side, and that tight end or wide receiver leaves the area, the defender has to run with them, right? They're in man coverage. And so you can pin the defense inside, which they did, and they ran untouched for three touchdowns. I mean, C.J. Verdell got hit one time at the one. His 70-yard touchdown, he got touched about the 7-yard line. And the other one that died just ran into, four of them, I think. They just weren't even touched. And so they were out-schemed. So it wasn't they were even out-physical, Gabe. It's they were out-schemed. And that has to worry you because the rest of the Big Ten sees that now, right? And so they're going to know Ohio State will make an adjustment. But then if they make an adjustment one way, then the other way is possible to get them, right? So now if they go zone coverage, maybe they're a little bit softer and you're able to get some passes completed on third and short or whatever. You know, so I think that's the concern. They were thoroughly out-schemed by Oregon. Joe Moorhead, the OC, did a great job. And teams will study that film now. And Ohio State has to make the adjustment, which, look, their defense has not been quite good comparative to what the talent they have for a couple of years now. So that's your concern is defensively, how do they get better?
All right. Well, Penn State looks like a good defensive team. And we know they've got a great coach. If I had to just dummy here, bet on a team who can out-scheme some of the best teams in the country and stop a good offense, I'd say Penn State.
Yes. You know, but I think the same thing still applies with you know, offensively, right, as a quarterback. And I know that people really get tired of me talking about this, Gabe, is the difference between you know, the quarterback that can do about 90%, 95% good, and the extra 5% so important. And we almost saw at the end of the Oregon game where Anthony Brown, that extra 5% wasn't there, right? And Clifford, it doesn't have that. It doesn't have that extra. So when things are going well, when you're ahead, the quarterbacks are fine. But when things are behind, things aren't going quite well. And that's why I worry about those teams being really good. Now, Ohio State, C.J. Stroud's not that problem. I don't think it's a problem for him. I think he's fine. I think in those situations, he'll be good. You know, Ohio State gave up a sack, they had a holding. Like, it wasn't really his fault why they lost that game at the end. So, I just don't think Penn State's quarterback is good enough to do that, Gabe.
Yeah. Well, we probably won't know for another few weeks.
Yes.
But obviously, the top teams in your top six mostly have the quarterback. So, you know.
Oh, yeah.
It's probably not changing much with Alabama and Georgia until records start to shake out. So let's talk about a couple teams that get a lot of national attention, get a lot of attention on this show because of the people who work on it. Listen, it turns out that USC and Texas are not back. Okay, a week ago, we thought they were. Then they were humiliated by unranked opponents, fell out of the top 25. And Steve Sarkisian, who knows, he may fail upwards into like the Cowboys job or something. But really disappointing weekend. Thank you. Disappointing weekend. For USC and Texas, two programs we were so excited to see relevant again nationally. What did you learn? Because I learned we got ahead of ourselves on those two.
Well, let's start with Texas first. I mean, look, Sark, it's his first year, okay? He's the head coach of Texas. Like, people got overconfident, and they got bullied the line of scrimmage by Arkansas. Arkansas is coached by former offensive line coach Sam Pittman. They're going to try to bully teams up. Like, it's no surprise, I think, Texas lost first road game. New coaching staff. It's actually not that much bigger. They were 7-point favorites. I mean, you know, I'm not that surprised, Gabe. But the problem with USC, I've said this for 3 years now, is their offense, okay? USC, for their entire history, you've been a fan for how many years, Gabe?
Oh, not very long. I just moved to LA. Wife went there.
Okay. So, but forever, the calling card for USC was quarterbacks, running backs, offensive line, and really like linebackers, right? Like physicality on defense. Linebackers, pass rush. You know, of course, they have some Hall of Famers in the back end. But right, when I think USC, it's big offensive lines, stud quarterback, running backs, and then, you know, very physical on defense. That's not all what they are anymore, right? They run this air raid offense. And I have no problem with the air raid offense, okay? I get its purpose. But let's talk about what offense they run. People look at Lincoln Riley as an air raid guy and look at the Oklahoma offense and say, oh, he runs an air raid. Sometimes, okay? Oklahoma is a power run football team. They run the ball, at least I haven't looked at numbers this season, but like 60% of the time. It's not what air raid does, right? Not air raid offense. They have air raid concepts in their passing game, but they do play action pass too, which again, air raid does do play action pass. USC runs like a Mike Leach, Howl Mummy air raid. They spread things out. They throw the ball a bunch. And they're soft as shit in the run game. It bothers me to no end. It bothers me. And it's I don't think it's even like they have bad offensive linemen. They've had offensive linemen draft in the first round, the last two drafts. They have bad guys. It's a mentality, right? It's a mentality. Oregon beat Ohio State because guess what? They want to be bullies, right? They want to go in your face and knock you down. And they want to punch you in the face. And they want to tackle and be violent and be, you know, Noah Sewell, right? Their number. 4th-and-3. Scrapes across. Just tackles the Ohio State back in the hole and stuffs them, right? Like, USC has none of those dudes. And they have guys on the roster. Drake Jackson, who's going to be a first round draft pick. Corey Foreman, who's a 5-star freshman defensive end. They have a bunch of talent, Gabe. But they don't play like they should, right? To me, USC should not be running an offense that is of this style. Does Alabama run this offense? Does Georgia? Does Clemson? Does Notre Dame? Does Oklahoma? Does Florida? Does Oregon? No, none of them runs this offense because you can't run offense like this and be a physical team. And that's the only way you win in this sport is being physical, right? And that's my problem with USC is they just run an offense that doesn't allow them to bully people up. When things aren't going well in a game, the way to get your team going is to run the ball 8 times in a row and bloody up the defense. And it fires everyone up. You guys know it. You've watched football long enough. You see that when your team is struggling and your offensive line just goes boom, 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 fires everyone up, right? USC can't do that, Gabe. They can't do that. And so look, the skill position players aren't as good as they were last year, right? Like they don't have those wide receivers. Drake London's really good, I think.
London's Brew good. McCoy's bad. Bad.
Bruce out.
Drop this week, but yeah, London's a legit player.
He's good. Katie Nixon, the transfer from Colorado, is good. Is Bruce not playing though? Right, I don't think he's playing. Is he back?
They've got enough players out there. Every game you see someone who you like. I think it's to your point. It's great, you know, they're great on 1st-and-10, but what happens when you get down to 3rd-and-4? And what happens when you want to just like turn clock and smash people?
They're terrible in the red zone because they can't rush the football. Rushing the football in the red zone is so important because the field condenses, right? So those holes in this offense, especially this air raid, aren't there in the red zone because there's less field to work with, right?
Right.
Defenses can sit on stuff. So guess what? Being able to just ram the ball down the middle of the defense is great in the red zone. They can't do that.
Well, yeah, and let's give a little credit also to the other side. So nobody was taking Stanford seriously. No, USC was a huge, huge, huge favorite. But Stanford, and they've got one of the better known coaches out there. And every time he has a big game, somebody asks, so I will, is David Shaw going to the NFL one day? He feels like a very, very good coach working with limited talent. There's guys slicing up USC who didn't even get offers any D1 schools, and they're running wild all over the field. His quarterback, you know, is like, he came back from a mission. You know, he's an older guy. Like, I don't know how he's doing it, but he makes pretty good winning teams in Stanford. Why can't he be an NFL coach?
Yeah, so Tanner McKee played really well for him. I actually think that he's moving that direction. I'll tell you why. He's either moving that direction or he's moving in the direction of doing more media, which he's really good at. You know, for a long time, Shaw has been very, not quiet, but like he doesn't really make news. And this offseason, man, he was very vocal about a lot of things. He was vocal about... he was vocal about the Arizona State recruiting scandal. He was vocal about his kickoff time this year. when they played week one. Like, he just was, he's been more out there lately. And I do wonder if that's because he's trying to get his name out there to do, you know, to either be an NFL coach or do more media. It's kind of like for years, he was very quiet. Now, all of a sudden, boom, he's just kind of been more vocal. And I think David Shaw's a heck of a coach. Stanford just can't recruit at a high level anymore, right? They just, they're not getting the players anymore that they used to have. The win total this year was 4. I mean, like, it's shocking how I think if he wanted a pro job, he could have it. But there's this change in his personality I feel like we've seen lately. And again, I cover the Pac-12 conference for a living, so I kind of see this happening. Like, he's just been more outspoken lately.
Yeah. Well, then let me ask you this. Are we sure that we know what the heck we're talking about? Because watching the game, the quarterback, you know, who, again, he missed a little football because he went on a mission. He was down in Brazil on a mission. So he comes back. Now, a few years ago, this guy was the number 3 rated quarterback in the country coming out of high school. All right, yeah, so he's just behind Trevor Lawrence and JT Daniels, two guys we've heard of. But now he's the quarterback at Stanford, and we're acting like this guy isn't good. Like, maybe they're just a good team.
I'll tell you, the reason why is he wasn't even starting after week one. Jack West started against Kansas State. Like, Shaw didn't feel comfortable enough to make him the starter in week one. I think that was, you know, that was kind of the issue. If you're like, oh, well, if Tanner McKee is this good, why is he not starting? Why is he? So that I think is part of the reason why. And look, Stanford has had good quarterbacks that have been drafted. Davis Mills was just drafted. And they just really still haven't performed at the level that was expected of them in college. And so that, I think, is the concern. Again, there's not really much talent around them as there used to be. And I think those are all the reasons why. Now, it might change because he might have found a quarterback now. And this, well, you have Vanderbilt this weekend, which I don't know how much you take away from that game, but things change quickly once you find a quarterback. As soon as that guy's found, your outcome, your outlook changes.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's talk about a couple teams who have less worries right now. I'm sort of going to repeat myself from earlier times this season. So Bama, Florida in Gainesville is probably the best game on the schedule in week 3, right? If this game isn't close, if Florida, an SEC team who can recruit like hell, who, you know, is borderline top 10 team right now, if they can't hang with Alabama at home, then we just can skip right to New Year's and just hand this thing to Bama, right? Like, there is no hope for college football if a Florida team in Gainesville can't get up and give Bama a game.
You're exactly right. They're 15.5-point favorites in Gainesville. And you're exactly right. Like, and we talked about this last week or whenever it was. I've done so much the last week, it feels like it's been a month. I used to get upset about the lack of parity, whatever you want to call it, with Alabama. But now I've become in awe of what they're able to do because they just keep rolling this thing forward, Gabe, right? Like, they just keep being able to play at a high level because the players that get to play, they only play for a couple of years and they want to win the championship. They want to have their own thing. They want to get to the NFL. So the motivation continues to be very strong for them. If this was a team where, you know, they won 1 year and everyone came back, it's not that they can't, that they're not going to, you know, they can't win again, but the motivation's a lot tougher, right? When you've already done it. All these players are new. They want to do it again. They want to win again. And so you have a new team almost every year that's hungry, that wants to get it done. And that's hard. Florida's not as talented as them. They're not coached as well as them. Can they hang tough? I think for a little bit, but in the end, the depth of Alabama is what prevails in all these games. And I think here, unless Florida's defense, which is just okay, they're not elite, they're not great. Alabama just seemingly score a bunch of points, and Florida just can't keep up.
Is Florida starting the right guy at quarterback? They've got a couple options.
I mean, we'll find out more after this weekend, right? Who the right guy is. Look, if you have two quarterbacks, you have none, right? Like, they need to settle in this game and find the right guy. Richardson has done a great job when he's been in. And Hank notes in here that he's the first Gators quarterback to run and throw for 100-plus yards each in his game since Tim Tebow in 2009. Like, he's legit. I think you stick with one this weekend. If Richardson's your guy, then do it. If not, stick with Jones. But you have to just, at some point, you have to choose one guy, man. Like, this is part of it too, right, Gabe, is how do you bet on a team that doesn't know what quarterback they want to play?
Yeah, well, you're teasing us for our NFL show. We got that issue going in a few teams in the NFL as well. I just really was slow rolling you into being able to say Tim Tebow. Remember when they had Tim Tebow, Jeff? Man, those were the days.
You weren't even a Tebow fan back then.
Yes, I was. Sure, I was. I wasn't as much of a Tebow fan, but I loved watching him there. And by the way, for you, for Hank, for everyone, Tim Tebow started his path towards greatness by doing exactly what you just said they can't do, which is have two QBs. He and Chris Leak would alternate drives and snaps when they won that first championship. Tebow wasn't the starter for that first championship, so it can be done.
It can be done. And look, Tebow was a fantastic college quarterback. Like he was a special player in college.
Yeah. All right. Last takeaway, the thing I think I learned is if I am a cat and I'm going to find myself in a precarious situation, I would like it to happen at Hard Rock Stadium with fans of Miami and UAB around. Did you see this crazy video of a cat for some reason dangling from the upper deck, dangling by a fingernail, and then is essentially caught in a towel from some fans underneath? Here's my question, Jeff. What are the upper deck people doing? Great effort by the lower deck people. Saving the cat.
There was no way to get him. The cat was like on a string.
Oh,
like
come on. Make some effort. Do something. MacGyver it a little bit. Dangle a rope.
I've had a cat before. Like they're okay. I'm okay with cats. But I can't just go attempt to like try to save a cat and get injured in the way.
Injured? What's it going to do? Scratch you?
No, like what if I reach over there and it like I just kind of like, I fall over the edge. It's not worth it for a cat.
Yeah. So you're saying you feel like too many bad things could happen if you put yourself on the line for the cat. Would you be willing, if I was there with a towel, would you be willing to hold the towel with me to try to catch the cat? Or does that seem too risky?
Sure. I mean, look, they use an American flag to catch the cat.
Yeah, it was very patriotic. Now, did you like their technique? Because they technically dropped the cat. They just broke its fall a little bit.
Correct. Yeah, it wasn't a great job, but you know, cats live forever, man. Like the cat was going to be fine the entire time.
That's what I didn't understand. They supposedly land on their feet. I don't really know what the big deal was, but okay.
They're going to be fine. But the biggest loser of the week wasn't the cat, wasn't the fans of this game. It wasn't the people that dropped the cat or failed to get the cat or whatever else. It's Florida State.
Yeah.
It's Florida State. Florida State lost Jacksonville State on the final play of the game. I think Jacksonville State had lost the week before like 41-0. And it was embarrassing. Go listen to the radio call. Florida State's now 0-2. But a young man on that team proposed to his now fiance after the game on the field. Gabe, if you're in this spot, do you just put that ring back in your pocket and try again next week?
Yeah, I think you hold off on that one. Yeah, I think that's the right
poor
time.
Poor kid, for sure, was like, we're going to blow out Jacksonville State. I'm going to propose to my wife and my future wife, and it's going to be like the best day ever. He had the ring playing out. You know, all his family was there to take pictures, and then all of a sudden, they lose the final play of the game, and dude has to do this anyways. Oh, the poor guy. I hope you have a great marriage, but oh, what a terrible engagement picture.
Yeah, it's not a great look. I didn't know that he had even had to do that. I don't know how you can't put it back in your pocket. I feel like you've already got her parents, your parent, whoever's involved, her girlfriends, everyone knows you're about to do this. You can't back off it because you lost a stupid football game. But man, yeah, that is rough. Let me, by the way, clarify this for people. If you listen this long to the show, you probably don't need this, but I did. This is not Dion's team that beat Florida State.
Correct.
There's Jacksonville State and Jackson State. This is not Dion's team, which is Jackson State. Because I first saw this and I was like, wait a minute, Dion beat Florida State? That's the biggest headline in history.
No. Go look at my likes on Twitter, which I don't think you should always do. People are obsessed by likes on Twitter. I don't get it. But I have I like the audio call from Florida State where the analyst threw his headset down. You could hear him like visibly. And then the Jacksonville State call, just like they're just in pandemonium. Oh, it's college football. That is the part about college football that's the best, right? You don't get that in the NFL. You don't get like Homer radio with guys that are just that, you know, he's the radio guy and he works concessions too. And he's the equipment manager, like just the guy is doing it all. Oh, that's what we love about college football.
Yeah, you're allowed to say we in college football. In the NFL, you got to be a little bit more objective. So with that, you've got plenty more to make us smarter on this week. We're talking NFL and college football on our Tuesday show, and then you're making some bets on both sports on Thursday with Matt. So let's wrap it up on the college exclusive today. Let's prep for tomorrow with NFL, and let's make me some money on Thursday, can you?
Just remember, guys, Oregon, little Oregon, with almost no recruits in the state of Oregon, went into Ohio State and smashed Ohio State. Just remember that. Just remember that as you head into your week, guys. The Oregon Ducks finally won a giant game. Again, we might be losing to Stony Brook at halftime this weekend. I do not care. Oregon won this game. We don't have a tough game for another couple of weeks. Don't care. Oregon won the game. My life is not complete, but pretty close. And go Ducks. Have a great week, everyone. We'll be back next week talking about Alabama, Florida, UCLA, Fresno State, some other big games are on the schedule. We'll do that all next week. Take care, everybody.